Hello and welcome to episode number 81 of Chill Squared. I'm your host, Andrew Chelney, and as always, a jam-packed episode today. Before we kick things off, go back, listen to last week's episode if you haven't already. Willie Donick stopped by the show to talk Preds, and Sean Shapiro of The Athletic came through to talk Stars after the Stars won at the Winter Classic. Look, this show has had Pat LaFontaine, Kevin Westgarth, Jude Hull, John Forslund, and more absolute legends on other episodes, as well as the two legends that are coming on the podcast today. This is bar none the best hockey podcast on the planet that is made by one person. I'm the host, editor, producer, promoter, etc. You name it, I do it for the show. Chell Squared is the only podcast that will take you through Chell and back every single week, and is the only hockey podcast that will deliver the type of content you deserve. Shout out to my roommate back in college, Jordan Capozzi, for the Chell and Backline, an all-time classic, man. Love it. I absolutely love it. Support the show. Leave a rating, a review. Share the podcast with other hockey fans. You are a legend anyway. You decide to help out Chell Squared. Best listeners in the game. Truly, truly appreciate you. I do the podcast out of love for the game, one of my days off from work. To become a supporter and get exclusive content available only to support, hit support this podcast on anchor.fm and choose an amount you're comfortable with. Though I am a full-time associate producer for NBA and NFL radio at SiriusXM, this podcast is not affiliated with the company in any way. The opinions expressed in this podcast are mine and mine alone, and may or may not reflect the views of SiriusXM. I don't use Wonder or Sears or anything. It's just me at home talking hockey with the amazing guests of the week. And be a part of the conversation on Twitter at Chell Squared, on Facebook at Chell Squared, and follow my personal Twitter at Chelney Andrew, C-H-E-L-N-E-Y Andrew. Shout out to at Hockey Learning for being follower number 500 on the Chell Squared Twitter account. Getting bigger by the day. Don't get left behind. You are missing out on some A1 content if you are not on board. The Montreal Canadiens are spiraling. 2-7-1 in the past 10 games. The Habs are currently the fourth worst team in the Eastern Conference. That's not what anybody expected after missing the playoffs with nearly 100 points last year. The problem isn't scoring goals. Montreal has a lot of firepower, but they're tied for eighth worst with Chicago and Nashville in goals allowed with 143. Mike Riley shipped to Ottawa. Marco Scandella acquired from Buffalo. Kovalchuk looking decent in his first couple of games with the Habs. But now what? The Habs keep losing games, including a bad loss to Detroit on Tuesday. What's the plan in Montreal? Do they have a plan to begin with? A lot of important pieces to this team are on IR and definitely played a role in this bad stretch, but time is running out for the Montreal Canadiens. Is this an issue of injuries, or is it deeper than that? And the slump creates a very important question Mark Bergevin and his team need to answer sooner rather than later. Given the makeup of this roster and the current record of this team, will the Canadiens be buyers or sellers at the trade deadline? We'll get into all of that and a whole lot more. Joining Chell Squared today is Canadiens play-by-play broadcaster Brian Mudrick. Brian, what's up? Welcome to the show.
What's up? Show 81. I'm going to try not to let down all the legends of the other guys that have been on before me, so I will do my best for you, Andrew. I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing great. And as I said, I mean, you are one of the absolute legends that have been on the show, that are on the show. I appreciate giving a couple minutes of your time here, Brian. And before we begin, I just want to extend my sincerest condolences to you and your family. Around this time last year, you made the Bell Let's Talk video and told the world you lost your brother to cancer. I'm truly sorry for your loss and deeply admire your strength, especially being a cancer survivor yourself, as well as your dedication to the sport of hockey and continuing your tremendous work as you mourn someone that meant a great deal to you.
That's very kind of you. Yeah, we miss him. We miss him every day. It's pretty tough. I went home for Christmas, and I'm from Northern Alberta originally, and I go back home, and my 89-year-old grandfather, he became a sort of celebrity. He thinks he's a big celeb now. His homemade Zamboni on our hockey rink, he made it, and he got like over jeepers, I think a million views of his Zamboni where the NHL got on board and TSN retweeted it, and he did it in memory of my brother last year, and we had it out again, and my brother's two boys, my nephews, we skated around and they reminded uncle how bad of a hockey player he is, which is me. So yeah, really tough. We miss him every day, but appreciate your kind words and happy to be here to talk some Montreal Canadiens with you.
Absolutely, and I appreciate giving me some of your time here. So you were in Montreal on Tuesday watching the Canadiens lose to the worst team in the league by a country mile, the Detroit Red Wings 4-3. Detroit scored three times on Charlie Lindgren in the third period to win that one. Like I mentioned a second ago, the Habs dealing with a ton of injuries, but at the end of the day, I think this was a must-win game for Montreal, and they couldn't get it done. Would you agree with that, and what are your thoughts watching this team on a nightly basis?
Yeah, you know what, and not just losing in Detroit Tuesday, Andrew, that's the third loss this season to Detroit. They've lost all three. They got one more against the Wings this season. You know, it was tough. You could point to a lot of things right now. You mentioned at the top of your podcast the injuries. You know, you lose Yoel Armia and Paul Byron and his speed and penalty killing, and Jonathan Drouin, who, you know, has that offensive flair for the team. Brendan Gallagher with that concussion running into Sherratt. Gallagher, by the way, very close and returning, I understand. Ben Sherratt was hurt in that game. He's got a lower body injury in that game against Detroit in the third period. So the injuries, they're tough. And you got guys like Weiss and Vaidemo and guys coming up to try to fill the cracks in the lineup. Claude Julien has five players that are 21 years of age or younger consistently in the lineup with Jesperi Kotkaniemi. And you got Ryan Poehling and Suzuki and the youngster Cale Fleury. So the future is sort of there right now. Unfortunately, it's a tough slide, winless in seven games. And it's interesting. They have a great slew of prospects coming up. You saw Romanoff at the World Juniors, again, one of the top defensemen named in the tournament. Caden Primo was the great goalie at last year's World Juniors. Ryan Poehling was the MVP last year for the United States when they won silver. So there is a lot of great pieces that are coming up. You saw Cole Caulfield, the quiet tournament for him, though. The young American sniper, the little guy with a big shot. So there's a lot of good things coming up the pipeline. Here's the thing. You've got your franchise goalie locked up for, what, seven more years, who is, what, 32, 33, Shea Weber, 34, 35, and these age ranges, and they're not getting any younger. So when is the time, you know, when is the sweet spot to not sacrifice your future but to try get the right pieces in place to make a playoff run? I think they caught a lot of people by surprise last year. I don't think anyone at the beginning of last season, no one gave the Habs a chance. And it came down to the final week of the regular season. They just missed out on the wild card, 3 points. They was two behind, but they had no tiebreakers with Columbus. So they missed it by 3 points. And what they, you know, 96 and you don't get in. And if you look on the pace right now, I mean, they're going to have a monumental second half. So the fan base here is tough, man. As you know, it's like now they're like, oh, you know, fire the coach, fire the GM. But I mean, with all due respect, I mean, Claude Julien, he knows what he's doing. He's a good coach. He hasn't had the pieces to work with. Now, you could say the same thing in Pittsburgh. They've gone through a plethora of injuries themselves and they found a way, but they have lost some key guys here. It's been really tough. You can only do what you can do with the lineup for Claude Julien. His hands are tied. And you have to give Marc Bergevin some credit because he didn't give up on the team. I'm not saying, you know, he got Kovalchuk, not sacrificing anything, really. You know, he's trying. He trades for the local boy, Marco Scandella, who maybe, knock on wood, you get a hometown discount. He's a UFA. But, I mean, he's trying without sacrificing the future. So there lies the formula of how the Montreals can go either way at this point, in my opinion.
Well, you mentioned Pittsburgh, and one of the biggest reasons for the contrast between between both of those teams is Pittsburgh has Tristan Jarry playing completely out of his mind, right? He's a fill-in on the All-Star team now, so he's going to be there completely playing lights-out hockey for the Pittsburgh Penguins, giving them a chance to win every game despite pretty much the entire roster being out with injury. But for Montreal, Carey Price hasn't looked good. Charlie Lindgren, in the couple of games that he's played, not much better. Keith Kincaid, who was brought in, he hasn't looked good either. So it's kind of a tale between two cities in terms of their goaltending. Jarry playing super well in Pittsburgh, stealing a couple of games for them when they needed it. But conversely for Montreal, Price hasn't really looked good. Lindgren hasn't looked good. Kincaid hasn't looked good. I mean, what is happening in between the pipes for the Montreal Canadiens?
Well, I think it's twofold. Number one, you're right. Price has not been good. Simple as that. The numbers show that. His body language, too. I don't know if on our broadcast, we ran a clip of him after the loss to the Jets, and he just said, you know what? I'm frustrated. I need to try and park that frustration and not have negative vibes and come to work and find a way. Like the young goalie, he's not in a good headspace right now. And it's tough. Now, if you look in front of him, you had Ben Chiarot and Shea Weber playing monster minutes, and Jeff Petrie. You basically had three guys really holding a load on that defense. And you can't play 26, 27, 30 minutes a game. You can't sustain that. I don't care who you are. It's just not, you're going to have breakdowns mentally. You're going to have fatigue, and it's going to wear you down. So Kulak and Petrie, they seemed to click last year as the second pairing for Montreal. Kulak, maybe not as strong as last season. Then you're asking a 20-year-old and Cale Fleury to come up with a 21-year-old and Victor Mete, who had success with Shea Weber. So Scandella comes in to try maybe take a few minutes, from those three guys I mentioned. When you have guys in fatigue and wearing down those big minutes, doing your best, and then all the injuries up front, and Yoel Armia, a big one, kills penalties. He's been just a dynamic player for Montreal this season. Gallagher, the heart and soul of the team, he goes down when he ran into Chiarot, that terrible looking play. I mean, it's just been that kind of year, and you can't plug the holes from Laval expecting similar results. And if you remember when they did their Western Canada swing just before Christmas, I mean, they're in a playoff spot not too long ago. And that's just the NHL. It's a tough league. It's a hard league. And yes, everybody goes through injuries. I just think for Montreal, the one thing, and we talked about this with our analysts too, and Dave Poulin and I were talking about it. They don't have that finishing number one guy. Don't get me wrong. Gallagher is a great player. Deneau's a great player. Tatar, Domi, they're great players. But Montreal doesn't have a Kovalchuk circa 2001, a Taylor Hall in his prime, a McDavid and Dreisaitl, a Crosby out of Ovechkin. You know what I'm saying? Like, they don't have that pure finishing guy or two, as some teams are lucky enough to have. And I think they hope maybe that Cole Caulfield can be that kind of guy. I think Nick Suzuki is showing signs of promise to be that type of player. His IQ is tremendous, and he's been leaned on in many situations, half out of necessity of the injuries, but because I think this young man can play hockey too. So it's been tough, Andrew. A lot of things not going the Habs way.
Montreal now under 500. They're 18-19-7. Like I mentioned, they're 2-7-1. I mean, the skid hasn't been doing them any favors. They were in a playoff spot, like you mentioned, just very recently, and now they're not very close to it anymore. Let's say that they are hovering around this record, around this point in the standings, around the deadline. Does Marc Bergevin, in your opinion, have a plan as to where he thinks the direction of this franchise goes? Is he going to become a buyer and hope that this team, with guys coming off the IR, could make a run and make it to the playoffs? Or does he assess the situation and go, there's no way we have to acquire some assets while we still can? What do you think is the direction of the team, and what do you think would, in your opinion, is the direction of the team that the team should go in?
Well, number one, I'm glad I'm not an NHL GM. I wouldn't want the job. It's really hard. It's really difficult. I'm just going to go by what I saw from last year from Marc Bergevin. So they were in a better spot. I mean, we still got time to the trade deadline, but what I do see, they were basically in a better spot, you could argue, points-wise, health-wise, last year, and he didn't do much. Right? If anything at all. So nothing major really happened. And I can't see anything else changing. He's been very adamant about not sacrificing the future for a rental or a big time rental player or, giving up these draft picks. The guys I just mentioned to you earlier that are coming up, five players are on the roster right now, 21 years of age or younger, not just playing. You have Paling and Kotkaniemi, in penalty kill, power play roles. Suzuki's doing that on both sides as well. Cale Fleury's been a nice little physical force in the back end, but they're still kids and they're learning. And there's going to be, there's going to be some warts in that. There's going to be mistakes in that as well. You factor in the young left shot Romanov defenseman that could be coming up next year as well. Is a guy like Cole Caulfield going to be ready for the NHL next season and provide a bit of that offense? He also's got a ton of cap space. And that's sort of the vein of the fan base is like, well, use it, use that cap space, right? What are we collecting all this cap space for? Well, they're going to have to sign some of their key guys in a couple of years. And these young kids coming up, it's a great question. That's why I'm glad I'm not a general manager, but it's kind of what I said off the top of your podcast. He has to do that balancing act of, do we hit the gas and go for it now? or we can tell in 2-3 years, we're going to have a real nice deep group of prospects coming up here. And we'll see what happens. I mean, he tried the Aho offer sheet. I'm not saying that was obviously, it wasn't high enough. Aho's having a hell of a year. It's not like he hasn't tried to do some little creative things, but the question is the fan base going to stay patient with this? Will they handle the Habs missing the playoffs again? And does next year more of an all-in mentality? The kids got a little more experience. Does Romanov come up? Is Caulfield ready? Then do you maybe go after a big UFA, you know, like whatever's out there. I mean, Taylor Hall was, you know, he's going to be a UFA. I don't know how hard Montreal went after him. I think they were in the conversation, but I don't think they were in the top few teams. If you listen to our insider, Pierre LeBrun, who I respect a lot, and I always listen to the guys smarter than me, Andrew. That's what I do. The guys who are in the know more than I am. But that is sort of my take on that balancing act. You want the future kids to come up, but then Carey Price, Shea Weber not getting any younger. When is the sweet spot to go all in?
Well, you mentioned, and we talked about the injuries not helping anybody, right? These are some top guys that play big minutes for this hockey team, and they're all out with IR. But how much of this slump, if anything, and like you mentioned also, there's a lot of 21-year-old and under kids playing on this team. I'm 22, going to be 23 soon, so these kids are younger than I am, so I don't know how I feel about that. I don't know how you feel about that. But these are young kids playing in this lineup right now while the vets and the big guys are out. But how much of this 2-7-1 slump right now is on Claude Julien, if anything at all? He seems to be placing a lot of confidence in Jordan Wheel and Nick Cousins. Would you agree with him doing that? Or do you think maybe if this continues, we could maybe see a change behind the bench?
See, I mean, this is just my opinion for whatever my opinion's worth. I mean, you mentioned, so guys like Wheel, Cousins, getting Nate Thompson for another 1-year contract. Those were good, nice moves by the GM to get some depth. And how that depth has been tested probably more than anyone would have wanted. And if you could have forecast this many guys out, I mean, and I said it, and I'm not disrespecting guys like Riley Barber and Dale Weiss and Lucas Vedamo, who just made his NHL debut a few games ago. I mean, these are not, you know, you're trying to plug an NHL team with, you know, guys who have either floated around or in the AHL or and it's tough. Like what is Claude Julien can only coach with what he's got in front of him, right? Like you can't, like, what can you do? Gallagher, Deneau, and Tatar, you know, when Gally got hurt, unfortunately, that was, I mean, that line, he could send out against any of the top lines and they would do a great job bringing energy, shutting them down and producing scoring 5-on-5. So, you know, you lose 5 of these guys and you just can't plug them like with air out of nowhere. Right. So the guys called up the depth. It's been, you know, it's been tested quite obviously. And so is that on Claude Julien? I don't know. They've lost more games in the NHL than any other team by one goal. So I think there's a lot of fingers that you could point to a lot of different parts of the Habs right now. You know, Carey Price makes a few more saves. Maybe they win a few of those games, right? One or two less injuries, right? But I mean, it is what it is. That's the world. That's the NHL world. Next man up. Injuries happen. And do I think it's on the coaching? I think he's done a pretty good job this year, to be honest. You know, Claude Julien knows what he's doing, but you can only coach with what you got. I mean, you know, it's like having a Ferrari outside, but you just got diesel fuel. You can't even fill it up, right? Like you need the horses to be able to do what you want to do. And if you don't have that experience in the depth, it's pretty hard.
That's a great point. And you mentioned Carey Price's body language throughout the season. If you're an NHL team or a coach or somebody in this organization, how would you go about, I don't want to say quote unquote fixing the issue, but how would you go about tweaking someone's body language? I mean, this is something that is mental and is tied to mental health and everything else that goes through everybody's minds all the time. But if you're a Claude Julien and you see Carey Price having these kind of lapses sometimes, or if you're the goalie coach for this Montreal Canadiens team, how would you go about fixing this issue?
If I had that answer, I'd probably be retired on an island somewhere. That's between Carey Price and Carey Price and his teammates in that room. I mean, that's really not for me to comment on. Carey has shown he's a world-class goalie. He had some struggles last year. Then he had a hot December and really was the reason they made that push for the wild card last year. And that was Carey Price. Same guy, same goalie, different year later. My answer is, I don't know. And if I knew, you know, like I said, I'd have a pretty good job somewhere. That's up for Carey Price to dig out of that hole. Like I said, the defense in front of him, the three key guys have logged a lot of minutes. And I mean, you walk into the room today and you know, there's no excuses, but you know, Shea Weber said it, like, we hate losing around here. No kidding. Right. They're tired of losing. No one likes that. No one wants that environment. And it's tough. Carey Price is just one component of a team. It's a team game. Yeah, he's frustrated. I'm sure the fans are frustrated. And for Carey, it's year two of that massive contract, right? So, I mean, the only people that are going to find a way are the people in that room. They're going to have to find a way to deal with this adversity and dig themselves out.
Let's say right after we wrap up, Mark Bergevin gives you a call. He says to you, Brian, if you were in my shoes right now and had to make some kind of move today, right at this minute, what would it be and why? What would your answer be to that?
I would say sign Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. trade a couple draft picks for those two. No, like, I don't know. That's like I told you, I'm not a GM. I don't envy the position. I watch the team every day and you know, watch the games, and I just see what the GM has coming up the pipeline. They got some great prospects coming up. They got some good young talent already here in Montreal. They have Caden Primo, who's looked real good for a seventh round draft pick, who, you know, world junior goalie, top goalie 2 years ago. I mean, they have the pieces coming up. I think it's hard. Yeah, in a market like Montreal, you know what makes Montreal amazing and one of the best markets out there in the world? Because the people care. You know what makes it the worst? The people care. They're so, right? The passion is just, it's undeniable. They were so spoiled for decades. This is a hockey mecca. The fans care. There's passion. They want the players to win so bad. In this city, when you're a Montreal Canadian and you're winning, I don't think there's a better feeling out there. But when you're losing, I mean, it's that same passion in a negative light, right? Like, the fans care. The fan base cares. And if you ask any diehard player, like, I always joke Max Domi could work for Tourism Montreal. Like, he loves it. You know, the hockey guys, they want it. They want to feel the pressure. They want it to matter. They want it to care. And the city cares. I'll stress it again. There's that fine line. I don't know the answer, but there's a fine line between, we got the kids coming up there. We got some prospects on the way. And it's not far away. Like, they got some good young players coming up, but when is the line? When does he start to spend that salary cap? When does he go all in? When does he make the choice to see what's up? And unfortunately for the Habs and for their fan base, it doesn't look like it's going to be this year, but time will tell.
Let's say all the guys on IR, you know, the Drouins, the Gallaghers, Byrons, Yoel Armia, and Matt Pekka even, let's say all five of them get healthy tomorrow and they play in the next game on Saturday, would this be still be a playoff team? In your opinion, would this be a playoff team even with everybody healthy? And if they were, how confident would you be in them making a deep run? Or is this a team, even when healthy, you feel like maybe a first-round exit, second-round exit, building off of that? Maybe they don't make the playoffs like they did last season, very close to it, but don't make it at the end of the day. But if everybody was healthy starting tomorrow, would they make the playoffs? And how comfortable would you be with them in the playoffs if they didn't make it?
Quiz time for you, Andrew. I'm going to ask you some questions.
Okay.
So who had a record-setting season in the regular season last year in the NHL?
The Montreal Canadiens did.
Nope, Tampa Bay Lightning, right? Most points in the modern era, salary cap era, right?
Well, yeah, the Canadiens, I mean in terms of how many points they had with not making the playoffs, but yeah, the Tampa Bay Lightning were incredible, and they
right?
got
and then
swept.
What happened in the first round?
They got swept.
Smoked by Columbus, right?
Yeah.
So my point is, we just said that before they were, the injuries piled up, the Habs were a playoff team, right? With the guys that they have, without even the Scandella move, without acquiring Kovalchuk, which was more of a need than anything because of the injuries, they were a playoff team. Tampa Bay looked like they would roll themselves to a Stanley Cup last season. And where I'm going with that point is that you get into the playoffs. I don't care if you get in by a point or 30 points, get into the playoffs and anything can happen. Carey Price is the type of goalie, if he starts to feel it and he goes the other way of how he's feeling right now and he's feeling in that groove, he's a guy that can win you a series, never mind a game. He can win a series for you, right? So very confident. I mean, a lot of our analysts and guys smarter than me, you know, picked Montreal to make the playoffs. And some of them said that even as about a week ago, that they still get in. They definitely have the pieces. But like you said it, we've talked about it, you take out five key players for Claude Julien on this roster, right? That is tough. I mean, that is tough. You hope that, you know, the depth in the AHL, you get a couple guys. Usually, you know, you can band-aid up and you can fight through it and maybe carries hot and wins you a couple in a row, or he steals one during that stretch. Unfortunately, it just hasn't happened, right? They haven't had that a game stolen here or there, or instead of losing all these games by one goal, maybe, you know, last year it seemed they'd find that way to win a couple by that one goal, you know? So I think it's just free reign, you know, once you get in. I remember still the Edmonton Oilers back when they got Pekka and Pronger back in 06 when Carolina ended up winning. The Oilers just got into the playoffs by, I think, a point that year, if I'm not mistaken, on the final day, and made it to the cup final against Carolina, right? You know, there's examples of teams that just get in and you get hot at the right time and anything. I mean, Carolina was another great example last year. I mean, they had no one gave them a shot, right? No one gave Carolina a chance. And they rolled, and they had a great run. The St. Louis Blues were dead last in the NHL, right? Just, you know, around this time of year, a couple days ago, and won the Stanley Cup. So get in, anything can happen. And to wrap up the point, I think that, yes, if the guys were all healthy with who they had, they would, if not still be in a playoff spot right now, they'd be right there. I mean, I think at last check, they're what, 6-7 points out of the wild card? So do this math. You lose 3 to Detroit. You lose 2 to New Jersey. They lost 1 of the Ottawa Senators. I'm not saying you win all those games. It's not an easy league, right? There's proud guys in all these teams, no matter how bad they are. That's like, you know, take 8 points out of there, though, right? I'd say 8's fair, like roughly, if on a normal, you know, given situation. And they're in the playoffs. So hockey's hard, man. NHL's a tough league. It's a tough league, my friend. You know that.
Oh, for sure. The 2012 Kings, also another good example of just make it and then see what happens when you get there. One last question here before I let you go, Brian. Again, super appreciate you giving a couple minutes of your time here. Like I mentioned, the Montreal Canadiens give up a lot of goals. They have a lot of offense, even with the injuries on IR, right? You have the Domi, the Tatars doing very well. But then you have on the opposite side a team that they score a lot of goals, but they also give up a lot of them. So we talked about Carey Price and his deficiencies this season, but is there another move to be made on the blue line to kind of offset that? Is it more of the defensive players like a Paul Byron being out that contributes to all of this, which, I mean, he does, right? He's great defensively, and he's out, which will contribute to that number increasing. But is there another corresponding move to be made to strengthen the defensive end on the Montreal Canadiens? What is the solution here if you want to give up? I mean, the solution to any team, right? Give up less goals and you're going to win more games. That's how you win hockey games, right? For the most part. But for Montreal, they do give up a lot of goals here. So how would you see them going about fixing it?
Well, you know, the stinger on that vein of conversation, I thought the stinger this season when they were back to back in Florida, they scored 9 goals in 2 games and didn't get a point. That hurt. And if I would have told you this season, Bobrovsky and Price head to head would give up 11 goals in a game, like it's been a weird season. You know what? It's been one of those years. That trip sticks out to me. I mean, that was pretty deflating to put up that kind of offense and not get a single point out of those games. Defensively, like a guy that comes to mind for me on your question. So like Philip Deneau, who is the Swiss Army knife of the Montreal Canadiens, I think an underrated center of the National Hockey League. I think he's number 4 in faceoff wins. He's so smart in his own zone. He produces offensively. He's a very gifted player, but you take Byron out, you take Joel Armia out, all of a sudden he's killing penalties. He's almost double shifting himself because he's also the top line center. You want him out there to take all the important draws, right? So the fatigue, I don't care. The fatigue will catch up to you. And it's just a ripple effect down the whole lineup. It really is. And there is no magic answer, unfortunately. I'm sure, you know, Mark Bergevin would have done it if there was. The problem is injuries lead to your depth being tested, lead to guys getting tired, leading to mistakes. And if there was one thing, like if I had to push one button on what has gone wrong with all that, they make one or two bad defensive giveaways or blunders, and it just seems in the back of their net. It just bang. Like the Robbie Fabry goal against the Red Wings on Tuesday. One little turnover, bang. He scores, momentum back to Detroit. That has killed Montreal. That one, sometimes you get away with those turnovers and you're lucky, but it seems with the Habs, they give it away, boom, it's in the back of the net, momentum gone, and the other team's got life. That's sort of been the story from my eyes anyways.
Brian Mudrick, voice of the Montreal Canadiens. Brian, really appreciate giving me a couple minutes of your time here. Recording on Thursday as opposed to Friday for my scheduling purposes. Work schedule mixed up a little bit this week, but good luck tonight at Edmonton. Big, big game. You're playing one of the top offenses. Actually, you're at home against Edmonton. Sorry about that. One of the top offenses in the NHL. So speaking of defensive problems, hopefully Edmonton and McDavid and Draisaitl won't give you too many of those tonight, but good luck. You got Edmonton tonight. You're at Ottawa Saturday. Good luck this weekend, and good luck rest of the way. I'll talk to you again real soon.
Look forward to it. By the way, I'm from Northern Alberta, so my family has allegiance to the Oilers, and my nephews, they're bought easily, so they like the Habs. So back home, it's going to be a tough one. I don't know who they're cheering for, but I'm excited to call this one. Thanks, Andrew.
Joining Chill Square for the second half of the show is Philadelphia Flyers broadcaster and fellow Syracuse Newhouse alum, Jim Jackson. Jim, what's up? Welcome to the show.
Glad to be here. I did not realize you were a Syracuse product.
Absolutely. We take over. The Northeast is taken over by us Syracuse Orange guys.
And we're often reminded about that by everybody who isn't a Syracuse product.
Because we let everybody know. That's the whole shtick, right?
There you go.
Indulge me for a second here. Take me through your journey from being a Syracuse grad to being a Syracuse grad who's also the voice of the Flyers.
Well, it really didn't take that many stops, unlike many people in this business. I grew up in Utica, which is, as you probably know, about 45 minutes from Syracuse. I went to Syracuse, then when I graduated, I went back to my hometown and got a job at a radio station there. And they eventually picked up the rights to the Utica Devils, which was AHL hockey at the time. And so I was lucky enough about a year out of college to be doing AHL hockey. So I did that for 6 years, and then they were moving, and they weren't taking anybody with them. So I sent tapes out to all the teams, and I got the Anaheim offered me a job as well as the Flyers, and I took the Flyers. That was back in 1993, and been there ever since.
Awesome. Do you still follow Syracuse sports? I mean, are you seeing the disaster that is the men's basketball team? Coach Q doing some great things with the women's team, but this men's team, all kinds of bad right now.
Yeah, I follow it. I can tell you that being here now, and I've become friends with Jay Wright and stuff, so don't kill me, but I really root for Villanova a lot.
No
offense. I mean, he treated me better than the coach at Syracuse treated me when I was there. Let's just put it that way. But I root for the Orange in general. I certainly do. I obviously keep tabs on the football and basketball teams. I announced both of those teams, so obviously I follow them. But not quite with the enthusiasm I did perhaps when I was in school, when it was it seemed like life or death every Orange game. But still certainly from afar follow them and root them on. It has been a tough year so far, that's for sure. It
hasn't been good. Did you follow any of the hockey teams at all? I was a beat reporter for the men's club team my final semesters at Q's, and loved being around that group and watching them play. Were you around the hockey teams at all?
I was not. In fact, when I was there, I don't even know if there was a club hockey team. I've always been mystified as to how Syracuse in the Snow Belt does not have a Division I hockey team. It just, to me, seems like they should have a team. It's hockey country up there. And you've got some great Division III programs in upstate New York. You have a situation where you have a city like that where you could attract people. I've just been mystified that Syracuse doesn't have Division I hockey. But the club team is going well. That's good to hear, because at least they have that. But to me, that's a school that should have Division I hockey.
And I agree. I shout it from the rooftops every chance I get. I mean, the rink.
I guess there's only so much money. I mean, much of the money goes toward, obviously, the football and basketball programs and lacrosse. So That's understandable, but yeah, I still would think that they could squeeze in some room for a hockey team. It's such hockey country, you know. It's just it seems weird that a school right in the middle of upstate New York is big and is illustrious from a sports standpoint in Syracuse, and they don't have Division I hockey. I've never been able to figure that out.
It's because of the rank. The rank they're at now is not fit for Division I hockey. The women's team is D1. The men's team isn't NCAA anyway. They're D1 ACHA, but they need a new rink. If they demolish the one that they have now and build a new one, then they'll have a D1, a legitimate rink. But because that costs money,
it's never been looked into to use the rink in downtown.
I mean, maybe, but you'd have to strike a deal with the Crunch, and I don't know. And I'm not John Wildhack, the sports guy over there, so I don't. I don't know what that deal would entail, but I'm sure if it was easy, they would have done something of that nature by now.
No doubt about that. People out of our pay scale have decided it can't be done. I'm sure there's a legitimate reason why.
Absolutely. So so speaking of teams that play that are orange, the Philadelphia Flyers picked up probably their most impressive win of the season last night. Penalty kill was outstanding against Ovi and the Caps. Picked up a big 3-2 win. What did you see from this team last night?
To be honest, I didn't see anything I haven't been seeing from at home all year. This has just been a Jekyll and Hyde team, home and road. I can't even begin to explain it. The players have been asked about it ad nauseum. They can't explain it. Coaches can't explain it. This is just flat out two different teams, home and road. They are dominant at home. They've lost twice in regulation all year at Wells Fargo Center. They've outscored opponents by well over 30 goals on the road. They've been outscored by over 30 goals. They are well below 500. They're coming off a 1-4-1 road trip, which they also had an 0-3 trip in December. So they just have been absolutely completely different. Carter Hart is tremendous in Philadelphia. He has been way less than tremendous on the road. I can't explain it. They can't explain it. Nobody could explain it. They could explain it. They do something about fixing it on the road. But at home, they've been great. And that game last night was another case in point. They're going to have to be good. They still have Tampa Bay and Boston coming in here in the next week. And then they go to St. Louis. So a real arduous schedule for them here over the next week. But I have full confidence they can play well when they're playing anybody here. It's just when they go out on the road, it becomes a bit dicey.
If you were to look up Jekyll and Hyde in the dictionary, you'd see a picture of the 2019-20 Philadelphia Flyers. I mean, like you mentioned, 14-2-4 at home, 9-13-2 on the road. I mean, you mentioned it, but what do you think is the biggest reason, or are the biggest reasons, this team is so hot and cold, depending on where they are? I mean, is there a specific thing that they're doing differently? What is, in your opinion, I mean, like you mentioned, the players have been asked this a thousand times and they don't know, but from your vantage point, is there anything that they're doing differently? What seems to be the root cause?
Everything. Yeah, they're doing everything different. I mean, the numbers you gave were the records. The records actually aren't as separated or disparate as the numbers beneath the records. When you're talking about the power play, the penalty kill, goals for, goals against, first period scoring, has been a tremendous problem for them on the road here of late. They gave up, I believe, 13 goals in the last four games of that road trip in the first period alone. So you say one thing, I can't give you goaltending. Goaltending has been tremendous at home, has been way less than tremendous on the road. I mean, we're talking well below average. The save percentage difference home and road is almost 100 points. The goals against at home and on the road, they have the lowest goals against average in the NHL at home, and at last check, the second highest on the road. So, I mean, it's just everything is completely different. So that's why I understand why the players can't come up with answers, because there really is no answer. Everything is different. And Alain Vigneault has done everything he can. He said there is no home type play. There is no road type play. It's not as though they come out at home and they blow everybody's doors off with physical play. They don't. But they just play better at home. On the road, they get behind. They end up chasing the game, and chasing the game at any point is a bad thing. And especially on the road. So there is no one thing. I wish I had an answer for you. I know the players do too. It's just something they're going to have to conquer if they want to make the playoffs. Certainly if they want to be in any kind of position to go on a run in the playoffs, they've got to get at least closer to 500 on the road, continue the great play at home. If they do that, they'll be all right. When they hit the halfway point, they were on pace for almost a 100-point season. So this is a team still having a very good year, but would be tremendous if they had just been average on the road as opposed to poor. If they get to average on the road and continue to play the way they have at home, this is a team to be reckoned with for sure.
It almost seems like, at least from an outsider's perspective, I'm not a Flyers fan, I'm a Rangers fan. So you are a Villanova fan now, then there's a rivalry there, and here's a rivalry, Rangers and Flyers. But it seems like, from an outsider's perspective, that there's too many cooks in the kitchen for situation for the Flyers. Mike Yeo behind the bench, Michel Therrien behind the bench, and Alain Vigneault, the head honcho behind the bench, has the strategy of employing three head coaches, but having only one of them be the quote-unquote real head coach, worked in Philadelphia so far?
Yeah, I think it's been outstanding. Alain Vigneault has been tremendous. He's as prepared a coach as I've been around. He is a guy whose ego does not get in the way of having two established assistants like this. He and Michel Therrien have worked together before. Mike Yeo is seamless. He's such an easy guy to work with and never has ego get in the way there. So I think it's worked extremely well. I mean, the penalty kill for the most part in the little stretch here of late wasn't good, but they've been in the top 10 most of the year. Yeo's in charge of that. The power plays in the middle of the pack, that's the one area they've really tried a lot of different things, and they haven't been able to settle on one specific formula that's been successful. So I suppose that's an area that could be improved. But in general, Vigneault and Therrien and Yeo has been a plus for the team for sure.
Flyers right now tied with Carolina, 52 points, sitting in the final wild card spot. What can we expect from this team before the deadline? I mean, what kind of moves do you think are going to go down? Are you going to receive maybe one or two depth moves to kind of bolster the bottom six? Maybe are the Flyers going to be in play for a bigger name player to really bring some heat to this team? What kind of moves do you think the Flyers are going to make before the deadline here?
Well, Chuck Fletcher is not a guy who will shy away from making a move. He is a little limited in that they don't have a lot of cap space. So if they were to make a trade to acquire a player with a big cap hit, they're probably going to have to lose some money as part of that deal or in a separate deal just to clear some space. The two players they've lost to long-term illness, not injury, Nolan Patrick and Oscar Lindblom, weren't heavy cap hits. So the fact that they would be on long-term injured doesn't really save the Flyers that much money toward the cap hit. So they're still pretty up against that. So he's going to be limited a little bit because of that. I think they could find a bottom six forward. I thought Justin Williams would have been a great fit, but I think Justin was always headed back to Carolina. He would have been a cheap fit, a guy who's played here before, a guy who does a lot of what Oscar Lindblom does. So I think that would have been a great fit, but his heart was obviously always in Carolina. Short of a bottom six guy, I mean, they're losing defensemen here of late. Gostisbehere and Braun are both hurt, but I think they feel as though, although it's young depth, they feel as though they have enough depth back there. The goaltending situation, knock on wood, has been healthy so far. Brian Elliott's had his injury issues over the years, but he's been healthy this year. Carter Hart's been healthy. Up front would be maybe an area they now, because of the losses of Patrick and Lindblom, I think maybe they need a little help, but whether or not you can get that help with where they're at in terms of the cap and the salary cap is a real question. I don't know. You have to be very creative.
You mentioned Shane Gostisbehere, and I want to mention him really quickly because there seems to be this divide among Flyers fans of whether or not Gostisbehere is a staple of the Flyers blue line, you know, for years to come, or is he somebody that should be moved? Because, I mean, two seasons ago, I mean, 65 points in 78 games, you look at it and you go, this is incredible. 5 goals, 12 points this season. He dropped from 65 to 37 points last season. He never quite seemed to be able to replicate that incredible year in 2017-18 in terms of offense, his production, his defensive play as well. Where is Gostisbehere in terms of, I mean, he's 26 years old, so he's pretty much at his peak right now. Where did that year go in terms of, you know, he hit 65, he hasn't been near that since. Where did that year go, and What is Shane Gostisbehere on the Flyers' blue line? Is he more offensively minded now, or is he looking at potentially just being a stay-at-home defenseman? I mean, what role does Shane Gostisbehere play for the Philadelphia Flyers?
He'll never be a stay-at-home defenseman, that much I can tell you. He is not big enough. He's not a guy who can – that's just not his role. For Shane Gostisbehere to be successful, he has to be a big part of the power play, a big part of the offense. He has to be putting points up. And you point out the 1 year, but you can't forget his rookie year either. He was ridiculously good his rookie year when he first came up, basically lit the league on fire, 15-game point streak. And so it's not a one-year wonder for Shane. It's he had a great first year, then he had a tough second year when he was coming off that surgery, same surgery Claude Giroux had, and they both kind of struggled that year. And they both had tremendous years 2 years ago. And so you were hoping that that was Shane Gostisbehere. That 60-point season was going to be Shane Gostisbehere moving forward. It just didn't happen last year. He doesn't have that dynamic presence offensively this year. And it's another one of those questions, similar to the home road play of the team, is where did that go? He was scratched for 3 games earlier this year and came back out of that sequence and played his best hockey of the last couple of years. He was shaking people at the point, getting free, getting shots on goals, scoring a little, setting up goals. Seemed to be a force offensively again, but then kind of slid back. And then now he's a knee, an MRI today. I don't even know. I don't think anything's come out on it. But who knows if that was the problem, because a knee injury for a mobile defenseman is not a good thing. So we'll see how that goes. That might have been why he wasn't quite as dynamic in terms of his ability to shake checks and get free and make plays. And that might explain a lot. And if it's a long-term knee injury for Shane Gostisbehere, obviously the Flyers take a hit in terms of their depth. But I will say, one of the reasons you have that segment of the Flyers fan base that says they should move him is because they have Ivan Provorov, Travis Sanheim, Phil Myers. They have a whole bunch of good young defensemen. They drafted a defenseman last year. Cam York will be here in a couple of years. They found another undrafted gem. And Igor Zamula was tremendous in the World Juniors. And so you're looking at a team that has defensive depth in terms of a youth standpoint. So that's why there's a large group of the fan base that says, hey, this is a guy that might be able to get you help up front or help in another area. And you have all these good young players coming. But as you know, fans tend to overvalue prospects. It's almost like they assume they're all going to be stars. We don't know if Zamula's going to be a star. We don't know if Cam York's going to be a star. We don't know if Phil Myers is going to be a star. All three of them have tremendous talent, and they put it on display at various levels, but not consistently yet at the NHL level. Management people, the Chuck Fletchers of the world, tend to be a little bit more realistic in terms of what they might get from their prospects before they start dealing away guys who've had 60-point seasons from the blue line. So we'll see how that goes. But as far as Gostisbehere's overall situation, clearly this injury, this MRI he's getting, and where he goes with it, is the most important thing as far as his immediate future.
Well, let's talk about Carter Hart, because he's 21 years old. He's younger than I am, which I don't know how I feel about that. I'm going to be 23 in a couple months here, which I don't know.
Get used to it. That's not going to get any better for you. Take my word for it.
I don't know how I feel about that. I don't know how you feel about that. We're all getting...
Yeah, well, the coaches are all younger than I am now, so it's not the... Elaine Vigneault's got me by a couple of years, but when the coaches start being younger than you, then you've been around a while. So you got a ways to go. You can relax.
Fair enough. Carter Hart, when he was first announced that he was going to play last year, I feel like myself included, we were kind of wondering as to the decision behind that. Before we even saw him in an NHL game, because, oh, well, he's 20 years old. Goaltenders, as you know, as most people know, goaltenders tend to take a while to develop, to finally hit that point where they are NHL ready. We saw, I saw as a Rangers fan, Igor Shesterkin won his first NHL game against Colorado on Tuesday. He's 24 years old. But for Carter Hart, he was 20. He got called up. Questions were surrounding that decision, and ended up he was terrific last season, but this year so far he's kind of seemed to be taking a step back a little bit in terms of his overall play.
I'll cut you off right there.
Okay,
there's been no step back.
All right,
he's at home. He's the best goaltender in the NHL.
Okay,
he's just part of this whole home road thing. Where on the road he hasn't been able to make the same kind of save, but at home. tell me, find another goalie with better home numbers than Carter Hart. So he's a 21-year-old goalie. He's not going to be perfect, but he has not taken a step back. Carter Hart is the real deal. He's a better person than he is a goalie. He's as dedicated to his craft as anybody I've seen. He's also dedicated to his community, dedicated to fellow human beings. He's just a tremendous person. And there's no, you know, when you hear about the sophomore jinx, sophomore slump, it often comes from guys who kind of get comfortable. There's no comfort with Carter. He's so prepared. He's just having problems. And again, the team's not playing well in front of him on the road either. It's not all Carter Hart, that's for sure. The Flyers' road problems, but he's not coming up with those huge saves on the road. Now, he looked a little shaky early last night, but once I think he realized he was at the Wells Fargo Center, he just took that game over. I mean, again, he made huge saves in the second and third period to let the Flyers win that game, and he's done that all year long. So I will never let anybody say he's taken a step back, because he had his moments last year. He had games where he was pulled last year. He wasn't perfect last year. He was a 20-year-old goaltender. Now he's a 21-year-old goaltender. I mean, Jordan Binnington, who has become obviously a great story. You know, it took him 5 years in the minors. So a lot of these guys, and even the Ranger, I believe it's Chase Turpin, they're telling us how to say his name now, but I believe, you know, he's 24. I mean, these are not, you can't compare Carter with these guys. These guys have 3, 4, 5 years of, if not pro experience, at least KHL level experience behind them. Carter's just a neophyte at 21. So, I think he's in great shape. I don't think anybody in the Flyers organization feels he's taken a step back. At home, he's been tremendous. So they know he's got it. They know it's in there, and they know he's the kind of person who's going to really do whatever he can to maximize his career. I think he's the real deal. I think he's going to be a great goaltender for a long time. And it's not no goaltenders. Henrik Lundqvist, you know, Marc-Andre, no goaltender is perfect all the time. They have their ups and downs. But Lundqvist and Fleury are headed to the Hall of Fame. They, if you remember, Marc-Andre Fleury had a stretch he couldn't stop anything in the playoffs. Henrik Lundqvist getting a lot of doubt now just because of where he's at in his career age-wise. Goalies always have to answer questions, because when they make a mistake, what happens? The puck's in the net. There's no last line behind them usually. Occasionally, the defenseman might help them out, but
yeah, or the post.
They make a mistake. Yeah, but when they make a mistake, usually it's in the net. So, and any goalie will tell you the posts are his friend. They're part of his equipment, so they won't say that was. They'll say they played for it to hit the post. But really, there's a lot of pressure on these guys. Really, the most important position I think in all of sport, outside of a pitcher, but a pitcher only plays one out of every, a starting pitcher only plays one out of every five games. Quarterback certainly is up there, but goaltender is right there. I mean, if a goalie's having a bad game, it's tough to win for that team. And these guys are human, so they're going to make mistakes. But Carter's, the Flyers are very happy with him. They know they've got a good one, and they're moving forward with it. And they just have to figure out, as with the rest of the team, how to get them all playing better on the road.
For sure. And I'm glad you cut me off there, because I didn't mean to say step back in terms of his play. I meant, you know, strictly looking at his overall statistics, it seems
they're all down because of his road play.
Right.
His home numbers are off the charts. So it's just so weird. And it hasn't been all the play in front of him being worse. He hasn't made the same kind of saves on the road as he has at home. But, you know, you don't expect a 21-year-old goalie to be perfect. He's just he's still learning. But, he's the real deal. I don't have much doubt about that. I don't think the Flyers have much doubt about that. If he stays healthy, he's going to be a good goalie in this league for a long time, possibly a franchise goalie, possibly a Hall of Fame goalie. I mean, that's how good he could be. So that's not a concern for the Flyers. The concern always playing on the road, sure, because that's team-wide. But they're not laying it all on Carter Hart, their road woes, because Brian Elliott's played a lot of road games, too. It's just been the team on the road, and goalie is often a reflection of the team. I think there have been a lot of home games where Carter Hart has elevated this team to higher than they really deserve to be. He's had some high 30 and at least 140 save performance at home, where that home record might not look quite as good if it weren't for Carter Hart. So he's been good. I don't think there's concerns there.
Fair enough. With so many young guys in this lineup right now, what have you seen out of Giroux's leadership with the team, and how does his leadership style compare to some of the other Flyers captains that you've seen in the past?
They're all different. I mean, Keith Primeau was a captain who led with by being very forthright to players, being very forthright in the media about players. Claude Giroux does not like to criticize players through the media. That's just not his way. And I think there are some media people who misinterpret Claude's vanilla nature toward the media to how he treats the game. I can tell you, I've been around him now for more than a decade. The guy, nobody wants to win more than Claude Giroux. He's a very intense individual. He does care about his teammates. I've been involved in some situations around Claude, which are not to be public in terms of around teammates, where I've seen how he goes to take care of them, or in some cases gets angry with them. Ilya Brizgalov angered Claude more than once in his tenure in Philadelphia, and I remember Claude steaming about it. But so there are things that happen within the locker room that the media won't know about, never will. But believe me, if you ask the players, you'll never hear a player complaining about Claude Giroux's leadership. They know he really wants to win. He's just not going to be a guy who bears it all to the media, or at least not on a regular basis. I think fans, I think media people love that when a captain is like that, but not all are like that. Some of the best captains in the business, Jonathan Toews comes to mind. They don't reveal a whole lot to the media, but they're great leaders. Mark Messier was more of a, and he's what leadership's all about, and there's an award named after him. He was more forthright. You knew what Mark Messier was feeling when you interviewed him or when he talked. But that doesn't mean you have to be like that to be a great leader. There have been plenty of guys who lead by example or guys who do their talking to their teammates behind closed doors and not through the media. And those guys have been very successful captains as well. So I think that's his leadership style. As far as his play, it's not up to the level he was 2 years ago when he was almost, probably should have been a nominee for the Hart Trophy. It's, I think, similar to last year, maybe a little bit better. He's going to turn 32 here any day now. And, he's not going to be quite the same player he was in terms of quickness that starts to leave. And this game is so fast now. The average age is closer to 25 than it is 27 or 28 anymore, right? So he's basically playing against a lot of younger players now. But he's still very creative. He's still the hub of the power play. He's still the guy, one of the guys here. And, he's got young help up front now, and guys like Travis Konecny and for Oscar Lindblom, hopefully again in the future, and other young forwards. And they're hoping Nolan Patrick would be part of that. That's been a big loss for this team. But, the veterans, Voracek and Couturier and Giroux and Hayes now they're going to make this team go where it's going to go this year, and hope that the young guys, certainly Konecny has blossomed, and hope that some of the other ones do, to help push him even further.
What have you seen out of JVR this season? Because he signed a big contract, but at least on the score sheet, at least on the surface, right? And you've watched him every game, which is why I'm asking you the question. But in terms of surface level statistics, it seems like JVR hasn't been the JVR that he was in Toronto. So what have you seen out of JVR? Is it just him getting unlucky, or is it other aspects of the game? Because he only has 12 goals in 44 games. He has 23 points, which is pretty good, but for JVR, it probably is a little bit lower than what he expects out of himself. So what have you seen out of JVR this season?
Yeah, I mean, this season, if you're talking just this year, last year he got the injury in the second game. And then it took him a good while to get going once he came back, and he missed an extended period of time. Once he got going down the stretch, he was one of the higher scoring players in the NHL. So what we saw late last year was, I think, the 30-goal JVR that we saw in Toronto quite often. Then early this year, he was playing well. He was getting nothing to show for on the scoreboard. He was not – Keith Jones and I talked about it often, a couple times on the air, but more off the air, about, he's playing well, but, he went several games without even getting his first goal, and then the goals were few and far between for a while after that. He went on a surge in December. I believe he was the highest scoring player for the Flyers in December, and I would argue he wasn't playing as well in December as he was in October. It's weird how hockey can work. The pucks start bouncing, and he had several goals in December that went off of opponents, whereas in October he was hitting posts. His overall play, if I had to sum his first half up, I would say is pretty much what the Flyers expect. His production was not. They do want a 30-goal, expect a 30-goal score for the money they're paying him and what his resume shows. I think he can still get there this year. He's going to have to go on another surge. But his overall play, 200-foot play, was not bad early in the year when he wasn't scoring, and probably wasn't as good when he was scoring. So go figure. It's been that kind of year. But overall, I'd say he's where, from his play standpoint, pretty much what they expect, not from the production standpoint. They do need that to pick up. He knows that. I've seen signs of his frustration here in recent games when he hasn't been able to finish some plays, where I thought early in the year he held his composure really well. He didn't show the frustration, even though he wasn't getting goals and he was getting chances. I didn't see a lot of frustration from him early on. I'm beginning to see it lately because we're getting to the point of the season where he realizes he's got to start putting up some numbers. So the frustration is there. He's just got to keep his game together. Hope that 200-foot game doesn't start to disappear, because with goal scorers, Patrick Laine, guys like that, when they don't score, a lot of times the rest of their game falls apart, and it's easy to see why. They start cheating, right? They start trying to cheat to get those goals. And when you start to cheat, your 200-foot game goes the other way. And what usually happens is your slump gets worse, and you're also even more of a problem for your team because you become a liability defensively. JVR can't let that happen. I don't think he has let that happen, but I do think that he just needs to play the way he did pretty much in October, even when he wasn't scoring. It's tough to tell a goal scorer this. Just do those, and the puck's going to eventually start going in. But when it's not going in, the player has a tough time believing that. But I think if he does that, he'll be fine, and he'll end up in the high 20s, maybe even still reach 30 if he gets real hot down the stretch. But you're right. It's about goal scoring with JVR, not points. And he's got to be scoring goals. And if he's scoring goals, that's usually a sign the power play is working too. He has not gotten the power play production this year. That's really where his production is way off. Again, early on, I think he was getting the chances, but lately, not even as many chances, I wouldn't say, on the power play. And he's in different units. He hasn't been on the number one power play all year. I'm not saying he hasn't been there all year. I'm saying he hasn't been a fixture on the number one unit. He's been kind of back and forth, one and two. So JVR's got to get those goals on the power play for his production to be where he wants it to be.
Great point. And one last question before I let you go, Jim. Again, really appreciate giving a couple minutes of your time here. Let's say right after we wrap up, Chuck Fletcher gives you a call. He says to you, Jim, if you were in my shoes right now, had to make some kind of move today, what would it be and why? What would your answer be to that? I mean, like you mentioned, Cap Friendly says the Flyers do not have a lot of cap space. They have under $60,000 of cap space right now. So you can't make a whole ton of moves without giving up somebody in return. But if Chuck Fletcher were to text you, give you a call and said, all right, well, you got to make something happen right now, what would it be? What would your answer be to that?
If I get that text or call, I realize the Flyers are in a lot of trouble. That's basically what my response would be to Chuck. But if in a hypothetical situation, he asked me, or anybody, you can just ask me what I would do with this team. I mean, if there is a way he can creatively add to the forward unit, forward group, I think I would do that. They also have Morgan Frost back in the minors. They have Joel Farabee still with his team that kind of hit walls, or their play kind of went downhill a little bit, haven't been productive at the NHL level, that they could still be impact players as the season moves along. If Farabee gets his second wind, or Frost regains his touch down in the minors and comes back. So that's certainly an option. Kevin Rusoff is down there. They have Carson Twerinski. They have other options. Connor Bunneman, David Kasha. They have players who've been up here this year that could come up and maybe contribute to that bottom six. But he might have to go outside maybe to find a veteran player of some sort, a more proven player that can give them some more scoring depth. The only way he's going to be able to do that is a rental at a very cheap rate, or if he loses some salary. And the position of strength the Flyers have would be on defense. So you'd be talking about moving one of the defensemen, whether it be Shane Gostisbehere, whether it be one of the younger defensemen. If they're moving one of the younger guys or Gostisbehere, you're talking about maybe a higher profile player coming back, not just a bottom sixer. You might be talking about a top six forward, because those are our top players, obviously, on this team. Those are guys they consider part of the nucleus of the club. So I don't know as if he's looking for that drastic a move. I think when you see a team play as well as this team has at the Wells Fargo Center, you think they've got it in them. They got it in them as currently constituted to play that well. Why can't they do it on the road? We got to find a way to unlock that road puzzle, because if they do, they're going to be one of the top teams in the NHL. They were, when they went into the Christmas break, sixth in the NHL. in points. I mean, they were right there with the best of the best. And then they had a dreadful road trip in the NHL. You have one of those 5 or 6 game droughts, and look what happens. You fall to 12th, 13th, 14th, 15th in the league. So you fall quickly. But I think given they've played that well in stretches and certainly at home, I think Chuck's probably teased and tempted to say, we can do it as we're currently constituted. Now, they made that run to the top with Oscar Lindblom as a major part of this team. Oscar Lindblom is not going to play again this year. He is a great player, not a good player. He's a great player. Oscar Lindblom is a guy who makes every player on his line better because he's smart. He wins battles. He has some finishing skill. He is a perfect complementary player to top players. Sean Couturier played his best hockey with Oscar Lindblom. When Claude Giroux's been on lines with Oscar Lindblom, he's played well. You can go right down the list. All the players wanted to play with Oscar Lindblom. That's all really you need to know. So that's you can't talk about that. And then obviously the human side of this is way more important. We want Oscar and need Oscar to win his battle. That is the most important thing here. But if you're talking a hockey standpoint, his loss is huge to this team. And then Nolan Patrick was going to be a major part of this club. He's going to be the third line center. You're going to have a Couturier, Hayes, Patrick top three that would be right up there near the top of the NHL. He's played not 1 second this year. So looking to the future, now we don't know what the future holds for Oscar. We don't really know what it holds for Nolan Patrick either. But if either of those guys, or maybe both, hopefully both are coming back to play, Chuck's not about to go about and make a major move from a salary cap standpoint with those two coming back, adding to the nucleus that you already have. So it's a real complicated situation for Chuck. I think because they've been so good, and even last night, as this team is currently constituted, they beat the best team in the league. He feels this team has it in them to be very good as they are right now. So I would think his motivation to make a major move is not great. But he's also a guy who we've seen in the past in his days in Minnesota who's not afraid to make that big move to try to make his team better. And the team needs a playoff run. They have not won a playoff series in 8 years now. So the fan base needs not only a playoff berth, but a playoff win. So there's that could lead him to make one of those moves. He's got a lot of things playing here. The team's good. They're very good at times. They're average to below average at other times, mostly on the road. Which Flyers team is he trying to add to? It's the team on the road, they're not close. So why bother making a big move? It's a team at home, they're so good. Why bother making a move? Because they're that good. So you can understand why he's in quite a conundrum right here, what to do, because his team's been such a Jekyll and Hyde. And also what I talked about earlier with the Patrick and Lindblom situations and the questions going forward. So there's a lot on the plate there as to what move he would make at this point. And if I'm the general manager, I probably sit pretty tight. I don't know if I can find a defenseman to move to get a quality forward. Maybe I do that, but by no means am I 100% in that realm because I've seen how good this team can play. So you think, maybe we're that close. Does one more move take us over the top? Does one more move set us back moving forward? It's quite a situation to be in.
Jim Jackson, TV voice of the Philadelphia Flyers, and most importantly, Syracuse alum. Jim, really appreciate you giving me a couple of minutes of your time here. And good luck the rest of the way. I'll talk to you real soon.
Appreciate it. My pleasure.
And this has been episode number 81 of Chill Square, number 82 coming up next Friday. Be sure to give the show a rating on Apple Podcasts. Would mean the world to me. Share it if you can. Follow the pages, Facebook at Chell Square, Twitter Chell Square. Follow my personal Twitter at Chelney Andrew, CHELNEY Andrew. Number 82 coming up next Friday. I'll talk to you then.